broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I'm not going to the wedding.
Why not?
Because there are still thousands of miles of beaches that...
You made me moneyless. I used to have $100,000 a year when you met me.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we'll go anywhere to find it. Although it's not exactly the number one target on the agenda every night, we try to get to a little bit of that. Mostly, we just try to have a couple of laughs, and to that end, you must have a backstage pass to our website, philhendryshow.com, where you can watch as well as listen. Watch as well as listen. Watch our live streaming video and listen to our live streaming audio. You can get the download the next day. Download all of our shows at philhendryshow.com, and download a good part of our archives as well as we continue to work on that, and access our comments section on our website, as well as guaranteed email response from me, Phil Hendry. It's all there with a BSP at philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. George Steinbrenner has passed on. He was the owner of the New York Yankees. He was, for a while there in baseball, he was bigger than life. He was the story. He was the beginning. He was the end. He bought the New York Yankees, and through his horse trading, and through his cajoling, and through his oftentimes infuriating meddling with the ball club, they won a few championships under George Steinbrenner. He returned the Yankees. He returned the pinstripes, the pinstripe Bronx Bombers, if you will, to those glory days when the Yankees were the rulers of the American League and almost yearly world champions. He was 80 years of age. He was the controversial but beloved boss. Well, beloved, who turned around the Yankee franchise in 37 years of ownership. He died this morning in Tampa after suffering from a massive heart attack. New Yorkers talk with Reuters as they remember the boss. That ain't the New Yorkers talking with Reuters. This is New Yorkers talking with Reuters.
What was that? Tubular bells.
No, that wasn't tubular bells here.
Oh, my goodness. This is a terrible day for New York. George has been great. He's always brought the winning chemistry to New York. We just got to keep it going. George, we miss you. We love you, George.
He was the Yankees for so many years. I mean, he's part of New York culture. You think about Seinfeld and everything else. Everything was George Steinbrenner. So he's a huge loss. It's a huge loss to baseball.
It's like the end of an era, I think, definitely.
Now, normally, George Steinbrenner, or Larry David, rather, played the George Steinbrenner character on Seinfeld. But on this one episode, Steinbrenner made the cameo himself.
I'm not going to the wedding.
Why not?
Because Jerry is bringing a date. I am not an usher. I don't have anyone to talk to, and I'm not sitting at that singles table all by myself.
Wait a minute, young lady. What's this about singles tables? I don't sit at singles tables. Singles tables are for losers. The Yankees have won 33 pennants and 22 World Championships. We're winners. We don't sit with losers.
Well,
and I've got an idea. You're going to go to the party with me.
Oh, well, gee.
You dance, don't you? Lose a little weight, get yourself in shape, and then when they throw the bridal bouquet, you'll maybe get it.
So that's Steinbrenner on the Seinfeld show. Steinbrenner's micromanaging on the field and his penchant for pursuing high-priced free agents and later taking a key role in escalating their salaries earned him a reputation as one of the most controversial figures in sports and made him beloved yet polarizing in New York City. George Steinbrenner, for those of you younger and don't remember those days, George, if you want to know how it is the athlete as superstar came about, more than any other guy in sports, George Steinbrenner was the guy. He paid the money. When a guy was a free agent, and free agency came into baseball sometime in the early 70s, I forget exactly which year it was, the Andy Messersmith case was pivotal in gaining baseball players their free agent status. Up until then, there was a thing called a reserve clause, which most progressive industries don't have anymore. Nonetheless, there was a thing called a reserve clause, and baseball, you know, Curt Flood, who was a player for the St. Louis Cardinals, was the first one to sue Major League Baseball, saying that the reserve clause basically kept a player tied to the same team for the rest of his life, because these teams kept signing these players. I got a reserve clause, reserve clause, reserve clause. I'll sign you. if no other team, you know, can sign you for more money. And there was this kind of collusion going on between the owners. Along comes Curt Flood. He sues, and this makes its way through the courts. And Andy Messersmith, I think, was the first player to gain his free agency. Well, George Steinbrenner was the first owner to come along in the free agency era of Major League Baseball to say, I'll pay. I've got the money, and I'm paying. I own the New York Yankees. And that means not only am I going to pay, I'm going to pay real good. And by God, this guy went out and he got the big names. He went out, he got the Catfish Hunters. He went out and he got the Reggie Jacksons. And when the Yankees were at their greatest, when we're talking about the Thurman Munsons, and we're talking about Roy White, and we're talking about the Greg Nettles, and we're talking about just a phenomenal Chris Chambliss, talking about the phenomenal teams that he put on the field, he paid them, and he paid them well. And if they didn't perform, he got up in their faces. Hence all of the arguments that he would have with the Reggie Jacksons of the world. And not only that, of course, the great celebrated battles he had with Billy Martin, a tremendous manager, one of the greatest managers ever in the history of baseball. And yet who fired this guy more than anybody? George Steinbrenner. Steinbrenner brought in guys like, he won championships with guys like Bob Lemon as manager of the New York Yankees, as well as guys like Billy Martin. All the way along the line, it was George Steinbrenner there driving people crazy, making people nuts, hiring, firing, hiring, firing, and making the New York Yankees world's champions, or if not world's champions, damn close, year in and year out. And as we mentioned, he also had feuds with Yogi Berra. He fired Billy Martin twice. He let his sons Hal and Hank run more of the family business, the baseball team and other aspects of the business as his health declined. He was in fragile health for years, resulting in fewer public appearances and pronouncements. Yet dressed in his trademark navy blue blazer and white turtleneck, he was the model of success. The Yankees won 7 World Championships after his reign began in 1973. Steinbrenner's tenor of 37 years exceeded that of any other New York owner by 13 years. Colonel Jacob Rupert purchased the Yankees in January of 1915, and he was bought out in 1922. He purchased the team in 1915, and he maintained sole ownership of the club until his death in 1939. So I don't know whether that's 24 years, right?
Hold on for a minute. Let me give you just 2 times 3.
What do you mean 2 times 3? That's 10. That's 34 years. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. What do you mean 2 times 3?
Carry one. Yeah, 34.
Yeah, really? Thank you. I did that in my head, man. You got to learn how to do that in your head.
Are you kidding me, man? He got a plate in his head.
I got a plate in my head.
I don't care if you got a plate in your head. Figure it out. He appeared at the New York Yankee, at New Yankee Stadium, I should say, just 4 times for the opener in April 2009 for the first 2 games of last year's World Series and for this year's home opener when Captain Derek Jeter and manager Joe Girardi went to his suite and personally delivered his 7th World Series ring. He was very emotional, said Hal Steinbrenner, his father's successor, as managing general partner. Until the end, he demanded championships. He criticized Joe Torre during the 2007 playoffs. Then he let the popular manager leave after another loss in the opening round. The team responded last year, guess what, with another World Championship. At a press conference at Angel Stadium ahead of the All-Star game on Tuesday night, Yankee manager Joe Girardi, along with Alex Rodriguez, Andy Pettit, and Derek Jeter, reacted to the boss's death. It's a difficult time, said Girardi. On a great day for baseball, the All-Star game, everything everyone looks to, a great man of baseball has passed on. He's meant so much not only to the organization, but to all of baseball. I could go on. Lots of other accolades. In 2009, the New York Yankees drew, get a load of this, 3,719,358 fans in their first season of play at Yankee Stadium, topping the American League in attendance for the 7th straight season. Currently, the Yankees remain the only franchise in baseball history to draw more than 4 million fans at home in 4 consecutive seasons, 2005 through 2008. Steinbrenner's death was the 2nd in 3 days to rock the Yankees. Bob Shepard, the team's revered public address announcer from 1951 to 2007, died on Sunday at the age of 99. And the Ohio-born executive leaves behind his wife of 54 years. 54 years he was married to his wife, Elizabeth Joan Zieg, and their 4 kids, Hal, Hank, Jessica, and Jennifer. Boy, there's something there, huh?
What?
He was married to his wife for 54 years.
That's a long time, man.
That's a hell of a great thing. 54 years. See, so that means he got married 50, 40, at the age of 36? What the hell am I saying? No, at the age of 26, if he's 80. George Steinbrenner of the New York Yankees. 877-876-PHIL. Now on to the more mundane as we continue on the show. Nicolas Cage talks about taking mushrooms. Wait till you hear this. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
What up, bud?
I don't know.
Welcome back to world famous Phil Hendry Show. We're trying to find out who owned the stinking Yankees, okay? We had the owners. We know George Steinbrenner's one of them. We know that Dan Topping, I don't know. CBS owned them. I think they bought them in 1964 and then they sold them to Steinbrenner. And I think before CBS, it was Dan Topping. And, those were some great Yankee teams in the 50s when Dan Topping owned them. I mean, what guy owned the Yankees? They didn't have good teams, you know?
Well, it says here a guy named Dan Topping owned them.
Yeah. What? Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. And George Steinbrenner.
Only those two, huh?
Yeah.
No, that's wrong, because CBS owned them, Jacob Rupert owned them, a whole bunch of other cats owned them.
Oh, yeah, that too, but Dan Topping is the guy... I like his name because it reminds me of, like, dessert topping. But I'm...
You give me that and let me see this. Boy, you are weird, man.
Yeah, I drew like a birthday cake.
Would you draw like a little birthday cake on Dan Topping's name?
Yeah, because of the topping.
877-876-PHIL.
What does that mean? Are you mocking me?
Yeah, I'm mocking you. Dan Topping. So what did you draw a little can of whipped cream? You are weird, man. Wee-hee-heard.
No, you're wee-hee-heard. Because you're asking me who owned the Yankees other than George Steinbrenner. Who care?
I care. Me. I. The host of the show. That's all you should care about if I care. Nicolas Cage tripped on shrooms with his cat. You might dig this story, bud.
Sounds pretty good.
Actor Nicolas Cage was a guest on The Late Show with David Letterman last night. And he was there to promote The Sorcerer's Apprentice, where he plays Master Sorcerer Balthazar Blake. In the film, he recruits a seemingly everyday guy in his mission to defend New York City from his arch nemesis. I know that we've got the Nicolas Cage performance here, or his appearance, rather, on The Late Show with David Letterman. Anyway... though the movie is geared toward children and teens, his guest spot with Letterman was geared certainly toward adults. Cage recounted a story about tripping on psychedelic mushrooms with his cat.
I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator. And I remember you mentioned your dog.
Yeah.
I had a cat, and my cat used to sneak into the refrigerator and he would steal the mushrooms. And I said, no, and his name was Lewis. I said, Lewis, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's not right. He ate them voraciously. He just loved them. It was like catnip to him. So I thought, well, what the heck? I better do it with him. And I remember lying in my bed for hours and Lewis was on the desk across from the bed for hours staring at each other. Not moving. Occasionally he would go, meow. But he would stare at me, and I had no doubt that he was my brother.
So, I mean, he's going to get in trouble for that, don't you think?
What for?
Did he say that the cat ate the mushrooms, too?
Well, I don't know what he's talking about.
I think he did, man. Wait a minute.
But I do remember having a bag of mushrooms in my refrigerator. And I remember you mentioned your dog.
Yeah.
I had a cat, and my cat used to sneak into the refrigerator, and he would steal the mushrooms. And I said, no, and his name was Lewis. I said, Lewis, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's not right. He ate them voraciously. He just loved them. It was like catnip.
Oh, horse Bucky.
What?
His cat didn't trip on freaking mushrooms. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Mel Gibson allegedly uses... What are you looking at?
What do you mean? You talking about the mushroom?
He's talking about psilocybin.
Oh. Well, your cat can't eat that.
Cat's not going to eat that and live. Not that I think that they could. Mel Gibson allegedly uses... Boy, that's the one thing that I can't stand in this world. These stupid bastards that get their cat stoned.
It's funny.
No, it ain't funny. If I ever hear about you doing that, I'll beat your ass. You can be sure of that.
Why? It's funny to see him do that.
If I ever hear about you getting your cat stoned, I'll kick your ass. That is a promise from me to you. Anybody that does that to an animal, I don't care how funny they think it is, ought to have their ass beat. You understand?
Well, the cat doesn't mind.
You don't know what the cat minds, okay? It's a cat, man. It's not a human being. It's not like it's going to kick back and listen to, some hip-hop. It ain't going to kick back and listen to, whoever, Andre 3000. You understand what I'm saying?
Just because I like to listen to that, I mean, a cat does.
I don't care, even if the cat brings its own music. Mel Gibson allegedly used racial slur in third recording. No kidding. Boy, that shocks the hell out of me. A man believed to be Mel Gibson uses a racial slur and again lashes out at his ex-girlfriend in a third profanity-laced recording obtained and released by Radar Online. Now, that's interesting. They say a man believed to be. I think the last tapes, they said it was absolutely for sure him. On the new recording, Gibson, or at least the man believed to be Gibson, and a woman, I guess it's believed to be Oksana Grigoreva, argue that a Latina woman who argues about a Latina woman that works in their home. Mel Gibson and Oksana Grigoreva fight over an unnamed Latina employee of theirs.
But don't hire to come there, okay? You get that message?
Well, I'll pay her myself. I found her. She's my dentist's ex-babysitter.
I've been paying her. That's my money that she gets paid with. I'm her employer, not you. You found her. I'm her employer.
Fine, but if I need to use her, I will use her.
Because I will not pay her if you bring her to your house. I will fire her, and I will do it fast.
Okay, then I'll pay her, because I need her. She's good.
No, you're paying her with my money. It doesn't matter what you give her. It's my money. You understand? You don't have your own money. You're only using my money.
Here Gibson says this guy Gibson. You know what? The more I hear this guy, as much as I understand his rage, somebody ought to kick his ass. Here he talks about owning his girlfriend.
You made me moneyless. I used to have $100,000 a year when you met me. You took me. You possessed me. Everything I am, you owe me with my liver and my kidneys and my thoughts and my soul. Everything. My career or whatever it is. Pathetic career, whatever it is yours. You control me like marionette. I don't belong to myself, only to you. I can't do anything, and I walk on the eggshells always with you.
That's because you're a using whore. Now I own you.
At the end of the clip, Mel uses a slur describing the employee.
Do not use at your house. I have warned you. She will be fired if she goes to your house. You find that and you find some other money that's not mine. Okay?
No, I'm using A, B.
She's fired! Do you understand that?
Fine. She's fired.
Don't fire her! Because I won't pay her!
Okay, don't pay her.
And I will fire her!
That's okay.
Only works at my house!
Well, there's nothing to do at your house. Baby's here.
The baby should be here, and she should work at my house.
Baby is where I am. You're insane.
Be there for long. I will fire if she is at your house. I will make it known and fire her.
Fine.
I'll report her to the people that take money from the okay?
All right. Well, in any event, that's Mel Gibson. That's chapter 3 of that guy's careening life. When I say careening life, it's only because I know about his life because these tapes got released. Otherwise, it would be just something none of us would have heard about. It would just be some agony that he's going through, or more likely his girlfriend is going through. The agony he's putting the people around him through. Get some medication there, Mel. Serious. Get some medicine. Let this girl go. Let her have her babysitter. Let her have a damn house. Go take a vacation. Find a way to calm down, because, Jack, I don't give a damn how justified you feel in being as pissed off as you are. You're on your way to a booby hatch, friend, as sure as God made green apples, as my dear old father used to say. All right, coming up, seven reasons that she agrees to have sex with you. I bet you didn't know why she was having sex with you. Well, we'll tell you why. Coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show at 877-876-PHIL. Mel, stick around for this one. You're going to want to know this, too.
Phil Henry. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show, and online at philhenryshow.com. Right after the show, we post a show log, so you can see what we did on the show. And when you go to download our show, or when you're checking out all the other shows that we have in our archives, you can sort of correlate which show was about what, which one of our characters or guests we had on. And you can do that going all the way back in ancient time, man. Because, as I said, we've got shows going back 15 years and longer in different generations of our show at philhenryshow.com. Now, seven reasons she has sex. Oh, I know. What was it you were saying?
Well, you're talking about why Mel Gibson is mad, and I'm just saying.
Well, thanks for belching on me too, man. God.
Yeah, no kidding, man. What is that? Garlic.
Ooh. God.
What?
It just stunk the room up with that belch.
Yeah, that is bad, man. You know, it didn't make any difference what you say about a belch. Mel Gibson he's hurt and he feels bad.
Mel Gibson is hurt and he feels bad. You know his name's Gibson.
Gibson, yeah.
No, man, I told you, that is not a guy that's hurt.
Yeah, it is. You don't understand. He's sad about it. He's sad about losing his girlfriend.
Oh, that's not a guy that's sad. That's a guy that's angry. Robert, you agreed with me, right?
Yeah, I did agree with you, but now I changed my mind. I think you hurt, too.
Are you guys idiots or something? Are you listening to that guy? That is an angry guy. That's a guy that's got he's got his claws out, man. He's ready to rip somebody's face off. He's ready to stick his thumbs go knuckle deep into the eye socket, just like in that movie 28 Weeks Later. Okay?
Yeah, but I know what you mean about that one and about going knuckle deep, but I think that he also is in love with her on account of she's hot.
He's in love with her on account of she's hot. He's Mel Gibson. He can have all kinds of hot women. I'm sure he was in love with her. He's probably been in love with every woman he's ever been with. But the fact is, this guy, I think he's scared.
Well, okay, why do you say that?
I think she's going to slap him with a palimony suit. Okay?
What's that?
A palimony suit is when you're not married to a woman, but she can prove that she gave up her career, she gave up her livelihood, she gave up her living in order to be your woman, which means she gave up her ability to earn a living so that you'd take care of her. Now, with your relationship going on the rocks, you can go to the court, she can go to the court.
Well, she can, I'm not.
I'm talking about the woman, yeah. She can go to the court, and of course I'm talking about the woman. She can go to the court and say, he owes me a living for the time that I gave up.
Yeah, but I mean, how long was she with her? How long was he with her?
I don't know. I think it wasn't that long, but you heard her. And here's the other thing that I think is really troubling. Mel Gibson sounds like an out-of-control jackball. Somebody needs to kick him square, kick him right between the you-know-what, and roll him down a hill. That much we know. But this chick is making this case for palimony right there on the tape. She's talking about how you did this, you did that. You know, you took my career from me. These tapes have been leaked by somebody. Who made the tapes? She did. So I think we have to assume that if they're getting leaked, she or an agent of this woman is leaking them to Radar Online. And I don't know whether or not Mel Gibson can walk into a courtroom with his attorney and say, you know, this whole thing is a load, Your Honor, because my client has been prejudiced with the public. He's been made to look like a raving lunatic. I mean, yes, he got angry, but those were privileged conversations. She violated the law by recording him without his knowledge. She makes this part of the public record. Now,
yeah, what about that on account of she broke the law and everything?
But you said it was a court case.
There is a court case. There's a court case, and I think we read it. It says that even if the tape recordings are made illegally, that is to say they were made without the knowledge of certain parties, if there is a compelling public interest, if there is a compelling right to know on the part of the public, then they can be made public and they are admissible in a court of law. Now, I might have that a little bit wrong, but I think the publication of those tapes, if there's a compelling public interest, is legal. Like in the case of Acorn, that was a compelling public interest. In the case of Mel Gibson and his girlfriend, though, I don't know.
Yeah, see, that's why I think he's going to be, like, he'll probably have a case, because nobody cares about Mel Gibson.
Are you guys crazy? His name's Mel Gibson. What's with this Mel Gibson?
You said it was Mel Gibson. You said the other way was wrong.
No, I didn't. I never said that. I said his name is Mel Gibson. We called him Mel Gibbon on a bit that we did on the show.
Oh, Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson, yeah. So the fact is that this guy, you know, it can cut both ways. But I think, first of all, I think she's setting him up for a palimony thing. I think that she, you know, she's got a lot to answer for in terms of these tapes being leaked. The judge may say, well, you know, compelling public interest. I don't know. It sure as hell prejudices the living hell out of Mel Gibson. I don't know, in front of who, in front of how, in front of what, in front of where.
Didn't you say you know his lawyer or something like that or anything?
Yeah.
I had a dinner one night that I will not say with who, but at that dinner, I was with a bunch of people. And it was a dinner. It was attended probably about 20 people. And Blair Burke, who is a prominent Los Angeles attorney, was there. And I found out later on that she represented Mel Gibson in the drunk driving. Now, I don't know if she's his attorney in this case. One thing about Blair Burke, she's fantastic at keeping this stuff out of the press. She keeps it complete. I'll tell you who else she represented. Do you remember that case that Predator... You know, the guy that they do the tape recordings of those guys that are picking up little girls?
Yeah.
Okay. There was one of a doctor that got caught. This guy was a prominent Bay Area doctor, and he got nailed by this Predator thing. This Chris Matthews. Is that the guy's name? Who's the guy?
Chris Matthews. I thought he's a guy on NBC.
Who's that cat for? Chris Hansen. That doctor. Yeah, it was Chris Hansen. That doctor that was caught on that Predator series. He retained Blair Burke as his attorney. Now, here's what's significant. Blair Burke is so smart. And after that doctor got caught on that Predator tape, they never did another new one. I don't think it was shortly thereafter that they stopped doing them.
Well, because on account of the stuff that they said?
Well, it was called To Catch a Predator. That's it. I'll tell you why. Because she said in one of the preliminary hearings, she made a very good point. She said, how do you know that this is the transcript of the conversation between the doctor and this supposed underage person? And they said, well, we're criminal justice or perverted justice. That was that company that NBC was working with?
Yeah.
And she said, that's nice. Who are you? Well, I mean, we kept the transcript. She said, well, that's, you know what? I don't believe you. I don't believe you. There's no reason why I should believe you. There is reason to believe that you prejudiced, that you transcribed that wrong or otherwise made that whole thing up, because NBC wouldn't have a TV show if you didn't. And you guys would be out of work, wouldn't you? So you have a compelling interest to make that transcript look as juicy as possible so NBC will use it and use your services, perverted justice, in finding these predators. So what she did was she compromised and she brought into the open the, frankly, the compromised nature of what NBC was doing with criminal justice. While they're looking for predators, and that's all very well and good, and it's a very laudable thing, by the same token, you got to do it within the law. You can't make it look like you're setting people up. You can't make it certainly look like you're dumbing up evidence, that you're phoning up evidence. And if you got a company, oh, my name is Perverted Justice, and I can assure you that this is the transcript. Well, guess what? I don't believe you.
Yeah, but how come they believe on a cop and everything?
Cops are different. Cops are cops. Cops are accredited. Cops are an adjunct of the district attorney. And the district attorney is the official representative of the people of the state. Okay? So everything's got to be just copacetic, baby. Criminal justice is a private contractor, or perverted justice. I forget the name of this company. I'm not saying they did anything wrong. I'm saying that as a private contractor, I'm not going to walk. If I got a client and I walk into the courtroom with a client, Well, who says? Perverted Justice. And who the hell are they? Well, they're the guys that were listening to the tape. Well, isn't that nice? I'm glad to know that they were listening to the tape. Is there any reason to believe that those transcripts haven't been doctored or that you haven't monkeyed around with them or changed them? Well, why would we do that? Well, let's see. Because NBC would drop your ass if you guys didn't have an interesting case to present to them week in and week out. So it says here that Stephen Kolodny is handling Mel's current legal fight with Oksana. Probably because Blair Burke does a slightly different... She probably doesn't do family law, you know?
Yeah, it does drunks.
I don't know if drunks.
Is she in the Yellow Pages?
Who?
That Blair Burke.
No, she ain't in the Yellow Pages, you jackass. What do you mean she's in the Yellow Pages?
Well, you said she does drunk driving.
Not everybody that does drunk driving's in the Yellow Pages. Wow.
Yeah, what do you think, man?
Well, everyone I've seen...
You know what your problem is? You ought to go to that Jesus Christ bail bonds. What was that thing?
Yeah, what was that? That was the funniest thing I ever heard. Where was that?
Yeah, I found that online. It was a TV commercial called Jesus Christ Bail Bond. And a preacher, you know, I found out it was Mark Lamont Hill.
Oh, that's it. Mark Lamont Hill had that on Twitter. You should have seen. This is the funniest thing I ever saw in my life. These two cats, one of them's a preacher. And the other guy is whatever, I guess,
like he's assistant preacher.
Yeah, he's like the assistant preacher. Anyway, these two guys are on TV, and what are they pitching? Jesus Christ Bail Bonds. That's the name of the company. And they're, if you're in jail, call Jesus Christ Bail Bonds.
Yeah, but they're doing like this, Jesus Christ Bail Bonds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, they had some stupid pitch. All right, weren't we going to do 7 reasons she has sex with you? Here it is. Number one, the number one reason why a woman will have sex with you, why your girlfriend has sex with you, why you, above all other men, she wishes to be intimate with. Number one, your physical appearance turns her on. Yeah, sure. Meatheads may rule your gym, but in reality, women prefer muscle definition over muscle mass. According to a recent UCLA study, when 141 women evaluated photos of shirtless men, they ranked lean, athletic-looking bodies as more desirable than both bulky and skinny types. Study author David Frederick says that women perceive men with big mustaches as threatening and also know that it takes time to build all that brawn, time you might not spend with them. They're looking for signs of not only health and fitness, but also a potential commitment. Oh, this is chicks that that don't know you yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, not your girlfriend. Your girlfriend go have sex with you on account of you a fat man.
Oh, is that why she...
Get out of here.
Number two, she thinks it's fun. A recent study in the Journal of Psychology found that women were 25% more likely to consider a man attractive if he had a good sense of humor and were 31% more likely to consider him a suitable mate. If she thinks you're fun outside the bed, she's more likely to have fun with you inside the bed. Number three, you're a good kisser. You're never too old for a steamy makeout session. In fact, a well-executed kiss could be your golden ticket to the main event. According to a recent study in the journal Evolutionary Psychology, women are far less likely than men to have sex with a bad kisser. Sounds easy enough, right? Not so fast, cowboy. Her definition of a stellar smooch may differ from yours. The researchers found that guys preferred wetter kisses with more tongue action than females did. You know, this is such a load, man. This is complete horse dung. And the reason why I say that, they ain't talking about me. And I'm not just saying that I'm typical of men. I'm saying if I'm different, there's got to be other guys that are different. I think guys will say stuff in a survey just to, because they're having a couple of laughs. I don't know how much of it is true.
You don't want to have a girl have a tongue in your mouth and everything?
What?
You're talking about, you retard.
I said, don't you want to have no tongue?
No, will you shut up, please? Don't you want to have no tongue?
Yeah, don't you like a tongue? The tongue kiss?
Not necessarily, no. No, I don't.
What do you mean, man?
Like the first time you kiss a girl, it's all... No, I'm not really all that nuts about it.
What do you mean? You talk about a girl kiss like that?
Look at Bud, someday when you're older, okay?
All right.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, number one, or excuse me, 7 reasons. One, two, One, two, three, four. It seems like the natural next step in the relationship. You've wined her, you've dined her, and you've wooed her, but still no sex. The missing link? Commitment. It's key to sexual motivation in women of all ages, according to a recent study in the Journal of Mexican Medicine. And
what did you say?
I misspoke. I'm sorry. In the Journal of Sexual Medicine.
In the Journal of Mexican Medicine?
No, in the Journal of Sexual Medicine. Research has repeatedly shown that making personal disclosures signals investment in a relationship. In other words, sharing intimate details shows that you're emotionally fit in for the long haul, encouraging her to move forward physically. The next reason, she's in a romantic setting. You know the old cliche, whisk her away to an exotic location and you're sure to score. That's probably true, but not for the reasons you may think. It's less the destination and more the shared intimacy of otherness or of being outsiders that sets the mood, according to a 2005 study in the journal Fangoria. No, I'm kidding. Tourism Management?
This is bullcrap.
Give it to me. That's the magazine, Tourism Management. Next, you make her feel sexy. If she feels sexy around you, she will have sex with you. But one warning, first establish your compliment safety zone. Listen to the things she says about herself. Watch the way she reacts when you touch certain areas, says Dr. Chris Fariello of the Council for Relationships. I can't, no guy named Fariello, I'm not taking any advice. And finally, she wants to please you. If you're striving for the big O, starting with the big C, communication. She may not have the sexual confidence to take charge, says Linda Banner. You need to let her know what turns you on. In a recent Boston College study, get out of here with this bullcrap. All this bullcrap about sex, man. How to have it, when not to have it, what to do. Have you ever heard more horse dung about something that ought to just come naturally? Has there ever been a manual? Have you ever read anything? Well, I don't even want to know about you guys, but I'm telling you, there's never been a manual that has been published about how to have sex that was ever worth a pinch of you-know-what.
Are you kidding? What about when they say how to, we're, you know, like a G-spot and stuff?
Don't worry about it, okay?
What do you mean?
Just don't worry about it. All this jazz about you want to look like a jackass. Start worrying about stuff like that. She's going to wonder what the hell it is you're doing. She's going to get scared. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, a federal court strikes down an FCC indecency policy. Like there is such a thing. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, now let me play this Jesus Christ bail bonds. Here it is. Just so you know,
I'm
not kidding.
Who is the first person to call when you get in trouble?
Jesus Christ bail bonds.
Jesus Christ bail bonds. If you're locked up and afraid,
bail out.
Bail out.
Bail out.
Bail out.
Bail out.
All right, that's so that you know that I'm not kidding.
That's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, man. What's that number again?
Get out of here. 10 toughest and easiest cities to find a job in. Dig this. So here are the 10 toughest cities to find a job, along with the number of people looking per every advertised job opening. Every advertised job opening, there's 12 people looking for the gig. So in St. Louis, Missouri, good luck finding a gig. Number 2, Detroit, Michigan. Good luck finding a gig there. Number 3, Miami, Florida. Number 4, Las Vegas. Number 5, Riverside, California. Number 6, Los Angeles, California. Number 7, Sacramento, California. Number 8, Portland, Oregon. Number 9, Memphis, Tennessee. And number 10, Providence, Rhode Island. Those are the toughest cities to find a gig in. The 10 easiest cities to find a job in. Washington, D.C. is the easiest city in America to find a gig in. San Jose is the second easiest. And the third easiest is New York City. Baltimore, Maryland is the 4th. Hartford is the 5th. Oklahoma City, the 6th. You know, and a whole bunch of other towns you don't want to live in. So,
why'd you do that?
Because I don't want to read the rest of them. It's depressing the crap out of me. There you go, man. All right. Want to tell you that this is the 20th year of the Phil Hendry Show. At least our 20th birthday is coming up in August. So, Visit our website to find out about different things that we may or may not be doing for our 20th birthday party, depending upon the, depending upon how we're feeling about things. You know, we may just go out and get blind, stinking drunk and get arrested, or we may have something a little bit more sedate and family-oriented. We'll find out, okay? But check out our website, philhenryshow.com, for that information. As I said, we've got our show log that we'll be posting later on, and we'll have our download and, of course, our live streaming video of the show. Our Twitter account is Real Phil Hendry. That's at twitter.com/RealPhilHendry and Phil Hendry Show at twitter.com/PhilHendryShow. That's our staff one. And over at Facebook, facebook.com/PhilHendry. So those are the places to go in terms of the social media. Bud?
Well, I just was going to tell everybody, if they want to email you, they got to do it on a website, too.
Well, yeah. So if you want to send me an email, send me the email over at the website. Just go to Backstage, click on that, and it'll say Email Phil. And if you got technical questions about your Backstage pass or anything like that, you got to go down to Contact Us, okay, at the bottom of the page. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, and I forget who was screening tonight. It wasn't the usual guy. Who was screening? John Wirick. Thanks, John.
Phil Hendry.